Welcome to the Game Informer Show. I'm Matt Helgeson, joined by Tim Turi.
Hello.
Jeff Cork.
Hey.
We are talking about horror. This is an extra scary horror edition podcast. So
that's public
strap
domain
in, folks.
Whistle.
It's gonna be a wild ride. So I guess you guys are here. Jeff contributed a big part of this this issue. Tim is, I would say, the preeminent horror fan at Game Informer.
Scholar.
I'd say you're a scholar. Yeah, scholar's
a
good
word.
My
goodness. Thank you. My gosh. You know, like, I've never been called that before, and like, here I am.
I don't really know what a scholar
friends
is.
Friends and colleagues.
I've heard it. It's
but,
a compliment.
I mean, if that's because I played those games and watched those movies, then I did that. and I, unfortunately, like, had to do a lot of travel right after we did this issue, but I was able to get my dumb, dirty fingerprints all over, like, the actual list and stuff and, like, help argued like the top 25 horror games of all time, which is like one of the coolest things I've done since I've started working here, I think.
Yeah. It was ironic that you had to be gone when we made that decision, because it was like, this is like Tim's, like the one issue Tim would want to be involved in the most ever.
But
you did get to be in one of our marathon blockbuster meetings.
Yeah. And, but I'm glad it happened.
Yeah.
And it's super cool.
I was probably more dead weight in those meetings, to be honest.
Because you know what? Like, I could have started a Game Informer 5 years ago and like, Ben Reeves is the horror guy. He does all that stuff. And like, I don't know how it happened, but like, I just liked horror games and horror movies enough that like, I was lucky enough to like settle into like a little niche here.
Mm-hmm.
And man, that's really cool. Like, it's been super fun. And then also just like even going back and like playing horror games I missed. And even having an excuse to for like the formation of like a list like this has been really cool. But then also like, I don't know.
You have a pretty scary life too, right?
Gosh, it's so scary. Like, I get chased by sort of like these mechanical lions on the way to work every day. Have you ever seen a mechanical lion?
Yeah. And when you get chased, does one of your shoes always fall off?
It's like you are there. My shoe falls off.
Mm-hmm.
Lion trips over it for a second, but then it's just right back on me, laser eyes.
We really need to get rid of that log in the parking lot, because I stumble over that nearly every day.
That is really rough on me.
It's tough.
Yeah, and the elevator's always not working. I have to take the stairs.
I push the button like 80 times.
Bing, bing, bing. Oh.
And me and Jeff always decide to go make out in a car in a really remote location in the woods.
Yeah, I have...
at a haunted camp. But nothing. What's going to happen?
What's the worst thing that could happen? Our wives would see us, but...
Come on, don't be a square. So anyway, yeah, I like horror a lot, and you know, Jeff,
yeah,
you and I have had a lot of conversations about horror movies, and like you've played a good chunk of horror games, I think, right? Like,
yeah.
What do you think is like the first horror game you ever played?
The first horror game I ever played.
Yeah.
Let me think about this. The one like the most effective first one, or just like the first one?
The first one that like you played a game and you were scared.
Oh, Resident Evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although, it depends on what you mean by scared, because I have to say when...
Not suspense.
Okay.
Like, legitimately just constant dread and being...
Well, picking up the key in Super Mario Brothers 2, right?
Oh, when yeah, Fanto?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy's a real jerk.
He's pretty rough. You remember Fanto, Matt?
Fanto.
It's a little Fanto is two-tone like, mask?
Yeah, he's red and white mask.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You go into
the
a,
mask.
To a jar.
I'm so bad with all those names.
But the pot.
Like the theater mask.
Yeah, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like the Motley Crue mask or whatever. I don't know.
Theater of Pain.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that was kind of...
That was creepy.
Yeah. That was weird.
And then Resident Evil. Okay.
That one in Resident Evil.
Do you remember where you were with when you played Resident Evil or like...
I was in...
How you heard about it?
I was in college.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like, did you play by yourself? Or were you with friends?
I was a college. Of course, I was with all my friends. All my college
didn't
friends.
Didn't have room in the dorms.
Buddies. Come on. Yeah. I played it with friends and my girlfriend.
Ooh.
And alone. So, like, triple threat, Jeff Cork.
Anything memorable from, like, playing that and, like, what you were talking about
those
at the time?
Dogs smashed through the windows. That was some spooky times.
Do you remember the controls being as awful as, like, everyone's like, oh, tank controls are, like, the biggest garbage in
I
the
remember
world.
At the time just thinking, it's video games.
Sure.
What are you going to do? You know.
All right. Matt.
I was more of a latecomer. I think Nemesis was my first
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What did you think? What did you think of that back then?
Nemesis was fucking awesome. I mean, Nemesis was sweet. Like that guy was scary, man. He's a big dude.
Go talk to Jeff Akrovic upstairs in our production team. You're like, nah, Nemesis isn't scary. It's not scary.
Jeff is like, that sounds like Jeff on everything though.
Yeah.
Talk to him and Kato about anything. That's what you're gonna get.
Very, very combative. See,
I was like, get away from me, you big.
Yeah, man. He just smashes through a window and then chases you for like a few screens. Yeah. And it's like a boss fight that's constantly following you throughout the game.
It's like a malevolent Kool-Aid man.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
Oh no.
Someone went drew mean eyebrows.
That's right.
On it's, the it's, condensation.
That was the concept art for it.
Yeah. Like, put a trench coat on it. This Hawaiian shirt's got to go.
That is super absolutely the first series for me, definitely. Like Resident Evil 1 when I was like 11 watching my cousin play it and like, oh my God, I don't even want to see the rest of this. And then probably before that, one of the scariest moments was like Sonic drowning.
Yeah.
I couldn't really handle that.
That's pretty intense.
That music, it's just, hey, this character you love is drowning underwater. Let's play the Jaws theme and then you watch him drown.
Exactly. Touches his little face and looks at you.
Oh, no.
He's like, tap my toe at you.
This was you. But anyway, I just wanted to know where you guys are all coming from on this. Yeah. So,
video games.
Speaking of Resident Evil, I mean, we could get into our list. I mean, it's been out, so it's not really a spoiler alert, but RE, we did the first Resident Evil we decided was the number one horror game of all time. And that seems, I mean, it's certainly the first game I think anyone, when you think of video game horror, you think of Resident Evil. So that was probably one of the least contentious spots on the list, I would say. It seemed like there was a fairly solid consensus that Resident Evil game would be number one.
It was either that or like a Silent Hill. I think there was like a slight amount of friction there, but not a whole lot.
Yeah, there wasn't too much. But like what I like about that Resident Evil slot is that, you know, there's the original game and then there's the remake. And the way we treated it, like if you look at our top 25 list, you know, this is like all the bullets say like it's PlayStation game came out in 96, which is true. But there's also the GameCube remake, which is being like remade in HD and coming out next year for like next gen and current gen stuff. They're like the same. It's the same story, same spirit, but they both kind of got wrapped together for like that number one, like just kind of being considered as the same game, you know?
Right.
Which I think is fair. I don't know. Some people might think that's a cop out, but I like that. Just like Resident Evil, they're both the same name, so.
Mm-hmm. It's fundamentally, graphics aside, right? I mean, and some streamlining, it's still the same experience. I mean,
yeah.
It's still on the same template.
It hits the same notes, but even like plays off of the first one. Plays on expectations, which we just played an entire back-to-back. The original and the super replay of the original and the remake, and that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Had a good time.
It was really good.
You can watch it.
Still scary. Still some surprises in there that I even forgot about, so.
Silent Hill 2 came in second. What's your thoughts on that game, Tim? I know.
Yeah.
You're like a not as much of a Silent Hill fan as RE, but I'm assuming.
But it was a close second for a long time. I mean, I think I've played every single Silent Hill. Like there's not a lot of big series that I can say like, you know, there's a couple Castlevanias I'm missing. Like, oh, that one just came out in Japan, or Resident Evil. I haven't beaten like Resident Evil Gaiden on Game Boy Color, but Silent Hill, I have played every single one, unless there's like a light gun game I'm missing. And from the first one to like Book of Memories, which was the garbage, like procedurally generated dungeon crawler RPG thing for the
Vita.
Is
that based on a movie too?
No. Oh God, that second movie though. Oh my God. Oh my God. If you want to see a bad horror movie. Oh Christ. Watch the second Silent Hill movie. Because the first one's like maybe the first half of it is like maybe was like one of the better like video game movies that ever came out. Mm-hmm. And the second half, is okay, kind of cliche, but the second movie is just ridiculous. But Silent Hill 2, definitely, like, I had a more, like, I played both the first and the second one when they came out. The second one, I think, is, like, objectively better in a lot of ways, like, just mechanically, visually, maybe just, like, the pacing of the story. And the story in general, which is, like, really kind of dark about, like, a dude who's dead wife sends him a letter somehow beckoning him to Silent Hill.
Yep.
And of course it has Pyramid Head. But Silent Hill 2 is really good. Those games, like people, this is one thing I think that gives Resident Evil a little bit of an edge is like people talk about Resident Evil's combat and stuff as being like clunky because the tank controls, you can move left and right, forward, backwards, aim up and down. Like Silent Hill 2 also has more melee combat involved. And like, it is a clunky mess. And some of that works for it. Like, I don't really know when this enemy's dead, and that can be really creepy. Mm-hmm. And then the puzzles can be very convoluted. It nails story, tone, characters. Like, it hits all those notes. And there's some scene where you're being chased by Pyramid Head down a hallway. And it just really gets inside your head. It is a insidious game.
It's really remarkable that Pyramid Head has stuck around as long as he has, considering just, you get a good look at him, and he's a pretty dopey dude, right?
I mean, it's just, he's an awkward thing to behold. You know what I mean? Like that game is really good at throwing an enemy type at you. You're just like, what is this thing? Like in Silent Hill 1, when you're fighting that giant lizard boss, you're like, this is just like a big lizard thing. Mm-hmm. Like, what's this? And then the lizard's head splits open vertically and can consume you and kill you in one hit. Mm-hmm. And it does that good thing of just like, you know, in essence, this is like a butcher dude with a giant knife, but he's got this weird, like, Pyramid Head, which is aptly named. But also, like, his intro, I think he's like molesting these weird mannequin things.
Yeah, we were like four-legged mannequin.
It's super strange, and you're like, I don't even know what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
And that's like one of the early introductions of this enemy. And man, and like there's even more than one of them in the game. Like it's just a really, really iconic enemy. And the game's great. I haven't gone back to it in a while. Mm-hmm. But I know I've been meaning to, but that game's really, really creepy. It's very well done. Probably best Silent Hill.
I really like 3 a lot, too.
3 is a good game. Mm-hmm. With Heather Mason, is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
It's the daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah, from the first one. Yeah, that one's good. I like that one more than maybe like the Room, which is the fourth one that came out.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, my personal list would maybe go like Resident Evil and then maybe Dead Space after that. I don't know.
Dead Space was great. And I mean, like, and maybe they kind of stepped in, you know, which we also feature Alien Isolation in this issue, which Jeff did a big deep dive on. But Dead Space maybe stepped into that space where there weren't really alien games that were kind of doing that really,
like, sci-fi horror,
you know, tense thing. And mm-hmm. I mean, they were pretty. I remember I did our original cover story on it back when Glenn Schofield, before he left for Activision, to work on Call of Duty, and he was pretty upfront. He was just like, "Yeah, we love The Thing by John Carpenter, love Alien, the first one, and there was no games like that, and we just wanted to do a survival horror game based on like movies that we liked, you know." And they were making no bones about it. You know, it's just like, "Yeah, that sounds great," and it was
awesome.
It was awesome.
And it wasn't even like a thing where like, oh, you know, the first Silent Hill comes out and like at first time it was very moody. Some of the combat wasn't great. Like Dead Space, they just absolutely nailed it. Like mm-hmm. it was out of the, like Jeff and I talk a lot about just down to the HUD or the lack of HUD and how everything's just kind of in universe. And
yep.
Like they just nailed it.
Get an audio clip and it just continues as you walk away, right?
Yeah.
It's just in your headset.
Yeah. Or, you know, your health is on the back. Mm-hmm. Ammo's displayed on the gun, kind of alien style, but you can read it all really clearly. And then, of course,
The big thing,
being able to move and shoot.
Yeah.
For the time was like, oh, okay, well, this is exactly what we wanted Capcom
whole
to do.
New world.
And they still didn't even do it for Resident Evil 5, which was still a great game. But, you know, those combinations of, like, taking familiar control schemes, like, everyone had played hours of Resident Evil 4.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people that like these kinds of games. And then you take those skills, essentially, and put them in this whole new, even more demanding setting with truer scares, a more intense atmosphere, and then like more like crazy fights and aggressive enemies and stuff. And there's some great moments in that, and like the death sequences, and like even just like the simplistic story all along. Like it was a really top notch. Like I was wondering if it was going to be as high on the list after all was said and done, and I think 3 is a great spot for it. Because I can't, like, that series, like, how do you even choose between, like, Dead Space 1 and 2? You know what I mean? Like, 2 is amazing, too.
Did 2 have the eyeball scene?
It did.
That's probably the most just, like, revulsion I've felt at anything I've saw in a video game.
Really?
Just, like, eye stuff, just, I don't.
Oh, that's.
Any kind of gore with eyes and stuff, I just don't. That freaks me out. Don't like it.
That was really rough. Oh, and then it's Dead Space. I know it's a super iconic scene already, but just like they did that great thing where it's like, hey, you're unarmed and being chased by an enemy that can kill you like very quickly, right? Mm-hmm. In the beginning, before that's like your intro.
Yep.
And that was like something that not a lot of developers have been willing to do because it can be really frustrating. but it's worth it for that scare, obviously.
Right.
So,
yeah, one of the things I thought was kind of interesting about, you know, making this list as a genre list, as opposed to we've done lists before that we, you know, the best games of all time, just flat out the best games of a certain system or a certain generation we've done. It's always kind of interesting when we're dealing with a genre, it's not as cut and dry, because first you have to sort of define what games are and aren't in the genre before you pick them. And, you know, there's definitely things like, you know, Fatal Frame or RE4 or, you know, Fear or, you know, Amnesia, The Dark Descent, that were like, well, these clearly are horror. But there was also, I thought it was kind of interesting, there were those games kind of on the borderline where I think there was some debate back and forth about whether they counted as horror or not. Like Last of Us, I think, was one that came up.
Splatterhouse
was a...
Pinning down what's horror and like nailing that was probably the most challenging thing about that, because it's so much just by feel. You kind of like got to feel it out, and like that one feels like it's a horror game or this one doesn't. You know, because arguments can be made for, hey, Pac-Man, you're being chased by ghosts, and it was probably one of the more tense games that you played up until that point in your life.
I remember Limbo too. There was a huge discussion about that, and that did not make our list.
And I think, you know, maybe it didn't make our list, but if someone wanted to make an argument about why Limbo is a horror game, like I can already see very valid arguments for why that would be. Yeah. Like I could accept it as one, you know, completely.
And then there was kind of the whole thing with, you know, Dead Rising, which is, you know, actually more kind of broadly kind of gonzo comedy, but then we sort of brought up like, well, The Evil Dead, and there's that sort of strain of horror that's almost like gross out comedy / horror kind of thing going on. So that seemed to qualify that. Splatterhouse, you know, is just, I mean, Splatterhouse seemed pretty extreme. You know, Jeff, you'd probably remember this too. Just in the day when you saw it, it was like, whoa, it's like,
oh yeah,
big blood all over. And, you know, like, I mean, the Jason mask was just super iconic in the 80s of like horror. And so, I mean, I'm glad Splatterhouse made it. And, you know, I haven't played it for years. People say it holds up pretty well as just like a hack and slasher, but.
Classic Rick.
But that was always kind of interesting, because there's definitely horror is sort of a hard one to define, you know, for some people. The Walking Dead, I think, was another one that, you know, people...
Oh, that one made a lot of people mad in our meeting. Yeah.
You know, but then there's so much tension there, you know, and I guess zombies are sort of... I mean, they're one of the main horror tropes.
They're not
right?
even... So. Yeah, they just, like, are right now. Like, you can't... It's hard to have zombies in your thing... Unless it's like Plants versus Zombies, they have it in your game, and like it not to be a horror thing, just kind of fundamentally.
Yeah.
Because they're dead things that are
trying to eat you. It's horrifying. It's horrifying. Yeah. Like, and
it's not
like
really sci-fi.
Like when you break it down, like if you took just a screenshot from Dead Rising and showed like one of these things, like decaying things chewing on Frank West, like this thing is just horrifying in like the basis sense of it. But then, you know, the arguments come in where it's like, well, also you're trying to beat the clock, and like if you're not in at a place at a certain time, you're just you completely miss the boat on getting out of this zombie infested mall. Which, to commit that much time to something and miss it, like trying to survive an actual apocalyptic event type thing, like that's really stressful, and I think that's really scary and what put that kind of over the edge for me.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, did you want to go through the whole list, do you think, or do you want...
I was going to just kind of pop around here. I wanted you guys to talk about, you know, because we also, I was happy that we did find a way to, you know, kind of slide in some more cult games, let's say. Like, I know Jeff and Tim, you guys probably have something to say about Tim for Blood. Jeff, like, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream.
Oh,
I think,
yeah.
Jeff, you did a classic GI on that once, didn't you?
Yes.
That was very good. It was a good read.
Thank you.
Those were two that I remember you guys kind of advocating for as games that definitely weren't on the radar for a lot of people.
Jeff, for people that don't know about the I Have No Mouth, like what is the top level?
Basically, it's based on Harlan Ellison short story. There's like an AI in the future who has kept five people alive, and it's a like point and click adventure game, and you kind of bounce around between these five characters. You pick them in any order, and basically try to go through the puzzles that the computer, who absolutely hates humans and humanity, has created. So like one of them, you're a doctor who experimented on people during World War II at a concentration camp. So you're doing all these awful things. In another chapter, you're a woman who's terrified of the color yellow because she associates it with someone who attacked her. This is super creepy and disturbing. And
that sounds terrible. And you have to be those people?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not something that I would consider like I'm having fun while I'm playing this, but it's a really good game.
Sure.
Yeah.
I feel like you think that's like available like on good old games or something like that?
Yeah, I think it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, that sounds like just bizarre.
Yeah, it's worth checking out.
And then like the kind of culty one that, I don't know. I mean, I think it was a pretty popular game back in the day, but it was like Monolith Productions' first game was Blood, mm-hmm. which was just coming out around the time of like, in the day, it would have been called a Doom clone, you know, like before people understood that like, oh, this is a new genre that's emerging. Like if everything was called, you know, if MOBA never got coined and everything was just a Dota clone, that's what was happening there with first-person shooters. And Blood just took everything that was, like, really great about Doom. And Doom, I think, is still an objectively better game. Doom's just so tight and polished. But and there could be arguments that Doom is a horror game. But I think that Blood embraces the horror elements more fully than Doom in the way that, like, at the core, these zombies are coming out. You can pop their heads off with a double-barreled shotgun. There's cultists running around chanting at you, you know, crazy flying beasts. There's even, like, and then it gets down to, like, the environments really sell it. Like, I'm in a graveyard. Now I'm in a mausoleum. Like, now I'm on the back of some hell train. And then going through, like, essentially what is the hedge maze, like a snowy hedge maze leading to a mansion that is The Shining. And you, like, find... like what looks exactly like Jack Nicholson's frozen corpse. And then the character says like, here's Johnny. And then you can shoot it or going through like a crazy freak circus. And like you hear in the background, like one of mm-hmm. us from Freaks. And then, the little severed hands crawling around saying, I'll swallow your soul, which is an Evil Dead reference. Like, and then you just see, green and red striped sweater on the wall with a hat. And then you see a hockey mask with a machete and a severed head with candles around it in another room. So it's just like...
It's like a museum.
It is. It is just like, if you like horror, there is something in this game for you on top of like being really fun to play and super gory.
And that was 3D Realms published there, right?
Yeah. That's right.
It's like the same tone as like, if you remember like Duke Nukem 3D, it was just full of... crazy references, and it's, Shadow Warrior had similar stuff too.
Our story says GT.
Yeah, GT Interactive. But I think there is a connection to 3D Realms because like 3D Realms was doing different things with like the Doom engine and stuff at the time. So we may be mistaking that.
I think they had the, yeah. 3D Realms was doing their own, they had their own engine.
Yeah, well, I think they were modifying Duke. It to make stuff like I think like well obviously like Duke Nukem and stuff like that. They had their own thing going on there. But anyway, The final word for my research was GT Interactive. But obviously, you know, Monolith is featured two other times mm-hmm. on this list.
Yeah, that was a surprise.
Yeah, Fear and Condemned. So
they're kind of the secret champs of, I mean, we figured Capcom, you know, would definitely have multiple entries, but I never would have guessed that we, you know, coming into it. But, you know, Monolith is kind of the low-key cult sort of masters of horror in a way. To have three different franchises...
Yeah,
top 25. I mean, that's really hard, you know, as opposed to doing like sequels to like Resident Evil. That's really quite impressive to come up with three separate, you know, separate games.
Yeah, no, yeah, for sure. And like the fact that now like they're on Shadow of Mordor, which is not a scary game, but super gory. So they're still doing that. Well, it's kind of gory. But like I feel like Shadow of Mordor, this is total tangent. I don't want to go on it too long. But like it's like Monolith is like, remember that scene where they cut off that guy's head in that fight at the end of Fellowship? Like, we're just going to do that so much. If they can do it once, we can make a whole game where you just never stop beheading people.
Watching Miller play it, it looks, I mean, it's really dark.
Yeah.
And kind of oppressive looking, or darker than I thought it was going to be.
So obviously they have roots in that with Condemned, which like Condemned, I'm so happy made the list. I don't think it was going to be a problem at all, but man, that game is an early Xbox 360 title. That is what it, that is, especially given how good it looked at the time and how simple those mechanics are. Like,
mm-hmm.
I was so immersed in that game. That game was terrifying. And it let me live out a weird dark fantasy I've had, which is like, what if you tore the blade part off of one of those, what are they called? Like the paper cutters that you'd see in like schools and libraries and crap.
Oh, God, yeah.
And you just tear it off and use it as a weapon because the thing was like sharp as, you know, like a katana.
Oh, I thought you always wanted to kill birds.
Me?
Yeah.
It just like...
That's not your fantasy?
No, not as much. But there are crows everywhere in that game.
One that I was very happy made the list and was pretty high is really a favorite of mine of that generation. I mean, well, favorite's a hard word to use because the game's pretty grim. But, you know, it's kind of the forgotten Rockstar game, you know, as big as Rockstar is and as many, you know, huge franchises like Red Dead and Grand Theft Auto and stuff like that, Manhunt is, I think, one of their kind of little gems of their catalog.
Oh, it's fantastic.
That doesn't get remembered a lot. And I think, number one, because it is really one of the most overwhelmingly grim video games I think ever made. And it was kind of released at a weird time when they were sort of coming off the controversy of Grand Theft Auto, and they decided to almost make something that was as bad as people say GTA was in a lot of ways. But man, it was probably the one game where I sort of almost felt like dirty for what I was doing.
I think that's exactly what they wanted.
That's what they wanted. They kind of put you in front and center, and you can't really shake off the violence in a weird way, or it just felt very visceral and kind of gross to be doing the things you were doing.
It's like, it reminds me of, like, you know, the scene in No Country for Old Men where Javier Bardem's character is like strangling someone to death, and it's just so unflinching and like just a straight on look at like, this is how you would kill someone with this thing. It's not over stylized or anything. There's no crazy like stinger or combo points that happen. It's just like, you just murdered a person because you had to, because these are terrible people and you want to get off death row. And like, that's, and then also through the filter of like a snuff film, like that's what that game did that kind of like would make that cold thing happen to my stomach a little bit, you know?
Yeah. And Brian Cox is the director, who's got an all-time awesome kind of ominous voice.
Amazing get for them.
That game was very, very disturbing. Another one, Eternal Darkness. That was actually when it pretended to delete my save file, maybe that was the most genuinely scared I've actually been.
Because you were reviewing it too,
I was reviewing it. So like, that was probably the most sheer terror I've ever felt. Like, you're halfway through a review and you think it's erased your save file.
That's amazing. Or just like, you know, tinkering with volume and stuff like that and thinking, just like making you think that something's wrong with your TV, which is like those fourth wall breaking things are, obviously that was a pioneer of that. Or at least embraced it. I know, obviously, like in 98, Kojima was doing that with like the Psycho Mantis fight. That was legitimately a really creepy part in any video game. Obviously, this sort of like fourth wall breaking stuff of Eternal Darkness, plus thinking about Kojima's fourth wall breaking, plus the fact that he's involved with Silent Hills now. I don't know. Just thinking about Eternal Darkness got me excited for Kojima in horror. So. Yeah.
Oh, the other one I wanted to touch on, because I had sort of a weird, not weird, but just interesting anecdote about it. So Slender, which we put on our list, Slender basically came out of a message board, right, where they were sort of creating like...
Yeah, it was on Something Awful. Yeah.
Something Awful, where the whole idea was like, you're going to create these Photoshops of kind of like...
Your own urban legend type thing.
Yeah. So, you know, recently, I think it was maybe about 6 months ago, do you guys remember that story about those girls in Wisconsin?
That are like all in on it?
That actually killed somebody because they thought they were going to go run off with Slender Man.
Yeah.
And
did the little girl die that they...
I don't know.
I can't remember the follow-up on that.
But it was really, you know, one of those kind of weird, chilling, like River's Edge kind of, you know, stories or whatever. But the weird part about it to me is because, you know, just we knew about it, you know, as an internet thing and then the game, obviously. But I was listening to like a local morning show and they were talking about the case and they were basically just talking about it as if like, well, these girls were doing it, you know, based on this myth of the Slender Man and stuff. So it's like, but they didn't mention anything about that it was generated from the forums or that it was like a game. So it's like in some parts of culture, like the Slender Man now is just sort of verged into like just being this like mythological thing, and like people have no idea how it was created, and it was only created like, you know what, 4 or 5 years ago or something like that. It was really weird how they were talking about it, and they had no idea, they had like no idea that it was ever a game or anything.
Like, I would just be fascinated to know what the person, like, I know that they've had people from like Creepypasta and stuff like that like talk about it and how like they don't really feel any remorse about this, because it's just kind of like, this is a disturbed person that did this. Like, there's other problems inherent here, but I would just be the person that wrote that thing. Like, what would be going on in your head to know that this was like in some way a catalyst for such a thing like that to happen? But like, at the same time, in a really dark way, like, you just like, it also ended up sort of supplanting this like urban myth, you know what I mean, that was just made up out of nowhere, and it changes the context of when you like will play Slender or something like that. If I played Slender tonight, I think that creepy story and terrible story would like of like the little girls like planning to murder someone would be in the back of my head, which changes the whole context of the thing. Very weird.
But I mean, how could you know, like, you're making a Photoshop for your message board buddies?
And then all the message board folks, like, community tried to, like, build up the mythos behind it. It's a really weird case.
Yeah, that's odd. Well, I think before we move on to some of the other stuff we did in the issue, you guys have any last thoughts, any last games on the top 25 you wanted to touch on?
I think Alan Wake was a huge one for that, because Alan Wake, I think, is like, it's more like almost psychological thriller, kind of Twin Peaks-y, Stephen King style stuff. I mean, obviously Stephen King is a huge, huge horror author, but that was such a cult. It was like one of the number one cult games from last year, I think. And I loved it. I think when we did our top five, like, there's an article online that Bert's pulled together, which was the, like, 35 developers' top five games of last generation. Mm-hmm. And Alan Wake was up there a lot. And I think it just really struck a chord with people. I don't think it sold incredibly well, but that game, really, really, really good game. And if people are listening to this and haven't checked out Alan Wake yet, like, probably get it real cheap, and it's still fun. I replayed it not too long ago.
So if you had to add a number 26... what would it be?
For me? Like, yeah, Doom. I mean, Doom? But that would, like, let's say everything shifts around and I can add one more to the list anywhere.
Nope, it's got to be just number 26.
All right, well, whatever. Doom 3. Let's say Doom 3, because Doom 3 is a horror game.
That did come
it is.
Up.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The whole Doom debate, and it kind of fell on the other side.
And
for
if
people.
Doom 1, 2, and, like, Final Doom, if all those aren't horror, Doom 3 is.
Okay.
It just is. Like, making you switch between your flashlight and your weapon so that there's a little bit of, like, a disconnect or, like, a lag between being able to see something and shoot it. That's scary. The lighting system was so good. It looked really good for the time. That's a horror game.
Matt?
Overblood.
Overblood?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
It's actually pretty horrifying.
Yeah.
In all the wrong ways.
I'm trying to think. I don't know if – I'm trying to think of all the games we discussed now. You know what? I probably would have put – and this was one that we did have in a sidebar.
Oh, you're gonna do it.
I kind of felt like Seventh Guest.
That's
should have
made gonna,
it.
That's what I was thinking.
Because
of too.
And just, I understand that we kind of put some of these as sort of foundational games because maybe Seventh Guest doesn't hold up super well. I personally probably myself would have put it on just for sort of the classic cred, you know, for dating back to '93. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I mean, was that what you were gonna say, Jeff?
Yep.
So, I mean, we're in agreement.
You,
we're in agreement there.
Number 26 is Seventh Guest.
Whoa, come on, guys.
I think, actually, too, and another one I see on that sidebar, which in terms of just being super fun, House of the Dead is super fun.
Yeah.
And
maybe
even Typing of the Dead. I don't even go as far as Typing. Typing of the Dead was super fun. I love that.
I was making a strong argument for just, like regular House of the Dead. Like, I know Overkill is more like grindhousey, goofy, which is, it counts, but I think just even like the light gun arcade games, I think, are huge.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. We're going to switch gears now. I think we touched on Aliens when we were talking about Dead Space. As part of the issue, we also kind of caught up with a couple of really high profile games that are coming up in the coming months here. One of them being Alien Isolation. Jeff Cork wrote a really good story on that you can read in the magazine. Obviously, Aliens has not had a super great track record as of late, but I think this one is sort of attempting to be the one that brings it back to its kind of roots as a real tense game and a real kind of horror game in terms of the original Aliens. And, you know, it's actually, I'm pretty excited about it. I think it has a lot of buzz. Jeff got to check it out some more. So Jeff, what are your sort of just quick, your sort of general impressions of Alien Isolation based on what you've seen?
Let's see. I'm really excited about it. And yeah. Basically, it's a nice nod to old school survival horror, kind of a premium on stealth and staying hidden. It's not a game where you're going to run into an area with a machine gun and just take out hordes of aliens like we have done in the past. I think that's where the series has kind of lost its way in a lot of ways, because everyone just wants to ape James Cameron's Aliens, you know, because it's exciting and it's super fun. That's what everybody's done. So it's nice to see it like a different take from somebody like, you know, Creative Assembly's looking to the original Alien movie as inspiration. So it's kind of nice to see something a little different where you are kind of prey in the game. So you got to run around and hide and be quiet and all that good stuff.
Did they nail the kind of atmosphere, that kind of dreadful atmosphere of the first one?
Yeah, absolutely.
And specifically like the 19, whatever 70s vision of the future.
Yeah,
that's just
oozing, most of the tech's of a little like it's weird all and dated,
push button
kind of
analog. CRT,
yeah. Oh, I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
yeah, it's super.
The old future was cool.
It's a lot better than the new future.
The new future we have now.
Worth mentioning is an indie horror game coming up that's called Routine, which also is embracing that, using like floppy disks to upgrade your gun and stuff like that. So,
oh yeah, that one looks cool. Have you ever seen the movie Moon?
I love Moon. Yeah,
I haven't really checked out Routine that much or read that much about it, but it kind of gave me a Moon vibe a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. I'm super excited for Alien Isolation as well. That's one of those games. Or when I've played it, I played it when they were showing it to us in the office here, and, you know, lights were off, but the room was filled with, like, you know, people, like, just either checking it out or the developers that were there kind of telling us all about the game. And I was still, like, you know, just wearing headphones and, like, still, like, sweaty palm, like, this is an intense game. Mm-hmm. I had some genuine, like, fear there and, like, unease. And I also played it with Oculus Rift, which is one of the, like, most terrifying 5 minutes I've ever played.
Oh, wow. Did it work well?
Yeah. I mean, I played 5 minutes, and like the interesting thing that happened there was like I played the game here, and I was able to use my logic and avoid the thing and kind of get me brazen, like, okay, I have to be out in the open, but I'll break line of sight if I just am in the open for just a couple seconds and I'm good. I know that stuff. But with the Oculus Rift, when it's like right there and you can just like you feel like you're there, my logic goes out the window because I'm just kind of like frozen. And like, I remember there's one part where it's just like, finally the aliens is coming down the hallway I'm in, and all there is a crate against the wall. And I'm just like, maybe if I just slowly crouch behind this crate, it will walk past me. And no, it didn't work. And then it's just like right in my face, and I jumped. And the Oculus Rift person that was holding the, like, attending the booth was like, it's okay, you're here. I think they were trained to soothe everyone when they came out of it and, like, immediately take it off when someone showed any
reaction. Wow, this sounds like, did they put a blanket around you?
They did, and it gave me a hot cup of cocoa.
Yeah, sat in the back of, like, an ambulance.
Exactly. Yeah. Wee, wee. And then the bad guy came out of the rubble and tried to shoot him anyway.
It's complicated.
Yeah.
So anyway.
That's out super soon, isn't it?
October 7th.
It's in one of those games. It's one of those camps where it's getting to the point where, like, I wonder if this is even fun to do anymore. Like, it seems really intense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, alongside, like, PT, where it's like, this is just super intense and dread-inducing.
Dread-inducing.
Dreadful. Yes.
I guess to round it out, and this is probably an appropriate way to sort of end things up, because he's sort of the guy that did probably the most to create the genre of horror, at least the modern genre of horror, Shinji Mikami. Who's since left Capcom. I guess everybody's left Capcom, huh? Basically all those guys.
Yeah.
The big shooters.
The big names. I think, I think, is Kamiya still there? Hideki Kamiya? Anyway, I know what you're bringing up. I'm going to double check this.
The Evil Within, which is his new game. Tango Gameworks is his new company, and he's doing this in partnership with Bethesda, which is kind of cool that he's joining forces with a bigger Western publisher developer. But The Evil Within, Tim, I would imagine, you know, you're a fan of the man's work, fan of the survival horror, and this certainly looks like him, you know, returning to what he does best. It looks squarely a survival horror game.
Kamiya's at Platinum Games, sorry. So anyway, yeah, I'm really excited for Evil Within. I started off kind of like skeptical. It seemed like very generic, like, okay, that's a barbed wire and brains and like blood going all over. You know, like they're like concept trailers and stuff. And then, you know, you kind of consider like what Mikami did with Suda for Shadows of the Damned, which made our list. But I think at the end of the day, that was a little bit that classic Suda thing where it's a little bit more style over substance. And the gunplay wasn't exactly what I wanted. But I finally did get my hands on Evil Within at E3. And it feels a lot like Resident Evil 4. But, you know, one way I'd put it then, which was like, imagine this alternate timeline where after Resident Evil 4... like, you know, Mikami's like, okay, that's cool. There's like a rock chasing someone down, like in these knife fights and all this over the top gonzo stuff. Like, what if we just kind of pull that back a little bit and make it way scarier and unpredictable and stuff like that? And it's like Evil Within went down that route. And it feels really good. And the enemies are super, super deadly. You can get taken down pretty easily. Resources are absolutely scant. It's plays with you in a way that, you know, like toys with your mind in a way that not a lot of horror games can pull off, where you're like looking at something and you turn around to do this other thing, you turn around and that thing has changed, like a hallway is suddenly different, or, you know, that room is now shut off completely and you're in just this sort of like enclosed four wall room, or you just walk into this room and a giant, like almost like Samara from The Ring comes out of the ground from a blood geyser, and she's got like multiple limbs and she's chasing you through these hallways, and it's really intense, it's really gory and psychological, and the gameplay seems like it's going to be solid, which it's like checking all these boxes. The only last thing is like if it has an even like comprehensible story, which I guess the goal is to scare you, not necessarily tell an amazing story, but I'd like it to have a good story. Oh my gosh. That was scary.
It looks really, I mean, this is going to be like super violent too, from all accounts that, or yeah, at least all the photos and videos I've seen of it look, this looks really gory.
I mean,
like even extraordinarily so for even a Res Evil game.
There was a part in the game, which I think people will probably talk about, where like you have to get kind of involved in some of the gore, which is like, I think like surgery type stuff. And there's a moment with that was like, it's really gory and there's a surprise there. And like, oh man, the gore was like, it reminded me of when I first saw that scene in the trailer for Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes, where they're like performing surgery on the helicopter and like just digging their hands into someone's guts to like remove a bomb or something. And I was like, this is really gory and like surprisingly so. And I'm exposed to a lot of gore through like video games and movies, but it's always like a little bit more just not quite as realistic as it is now, because visuals keep getting better and better, but there's just this, it's getting real.
We should also give a shout out here before we end. We did have Jeff Markey of Faba did a good thing rounding up some big games on the horizon, some really cool looking horror games. Obviously, Tim, I'm sure you're excited about Silent Hills, which is Guillermo del Toro and Hideo Kojima.
Yeah, PT is like one of the scariest things I've ever played. Just like that contained little tease for Silent Hills. So if they attack Silent Hills with like half the veracity and like just even partial achievement of the vision that they have, like I think it'll be one of the better games in that series in a long time.
And that's going to take forever to come out too.
Potentially. You know, you got to wonder how involved they are in the actual development. But I don't know. Hopefully it does come out.
Yeah, the other one, I think, what was that one? Supermassive, Until Dawn. That looked kind of cool, okay. I thought.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That one started as like a PS3 move game or whatever.
Yeah. But it's sort of surviving a slasher flick. Soma, which is the Frictional, the Amnesia guys. Mm-hmm. Assuming that's kind of on your radar as well. So there's a lot of cool stuff. The HD remaster of the original Resident Evil. So
looks
if you
great.
Wanted to play the best horror game of all time, according to us, you'll have probably what will be the best way to do it coming
I think
up
so.
Soon.
And, you know, what's interesting about that is that it's got, you know, new control scheme, so you don't have to worry about the tank controls, and it's got a new sort of aspect ratio, so it doesn't have to be 4:3. You can play it in 16:9. They did some tricks to kind of make that more accessible. Dying Light's really cool. That's by Techland. So, like, these are the people that made Dead Island 1, and then Deep Silver owns Dead Island's IP, and they're working with Warner Brothers for this one. And this one is like combining like Mirror's Edge style parkour with like a day-night cycle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's definitely doing more interesting new things than I think from what I've seen of Dead Island 2 so far.
Yeah, Dead Island 2, I got a bad feeling about that one for some reason.
I don't have an amazing feeling about it either yet, but I could still be surprised. And then another one worth mentioning, which wasn't really revealed before this issue and shown at TGS, and like Kim got a chance to play it, is Resident Evil Revelations 2, which is a sequel to the 3DS / you know last gen stuff. It came out on 360 and PS3 last generation, received more warmly than Resident Evil 6, and now they're doing a sequel that stars like Claire Redfield and the daughter of Barry Burton, and it's going to be next gen and last gen, and then it's like episodic instead of a full retail game.
Cool. Look good?
It does. It looks good. You know, it's one of those games that like the visuals look solid, but it's all those cross-gen games have like a certain, you know, it's you can tell a cross-gen game. They still look really good, but there's just something about it. But yeah, you know, Kim was a big fan of it. So
cool. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And this was fun. This was good. I like these special edition ones where we just blab on and on.
Indeed, as do I.
So you guys have a good week, and we will be back next week with the Game Informer show. Until then, see ya.
You don't go.